Well, top of the morning to you and welcome to the 600-second kick-ass live show designed to put a little smile on your face, a little spring into your step, and allow me to give you a little kick in the rump, a little push in the bottom, or as I like to call it, a little kick in the arse. Now, we have a few fun facts for you. Do you realise that chewing gum while peeling onions will actually stop you from crying? It will. And the glue on Israeli postage stamps is certified kosher. Do you know what kosher is, Jen?
I do.
Okay, good. I'm just checking to see if you know what I'm talking about. And the Guinness Book of Records holds the record for being the book that's most often stolen from a public library. And do you realise this? Astronauts are not allowed to eat beans before they go up in space because passing wind in a spacesuit damages them. Now, last one here. Look, beetles. Apparently, they taste like apples. Wasps taste like pine nuts, and worms like fried bacon. Who does these tests, Jen?
Not me.
All right, we got to describe what's going on here. Saturday morning, sun's up, and where are we? Where are we sitting?
We are in our backyard, the 12 acres land that we have, and we are actually sitting on our trampoline in the sun while the birds are chirping on this beautiful spring morning, drinking latte.
All right. Well, listen, this is the ask. Always such a cute word. Ask, Dave. And I thought you'd come out and give us a hand. So welcome, Jen, your first show really co-hosting.
Aw, thanks for having me, Dave.
There's been a demand. You're in demand. People keep saying, you should work with Jen.
Aw.
I think it's your mother.
Mainly, yes, I'm sure.
All right. So let's go.
All right. So our first question is from Alex Beale. Alex says, what is the best way to end a friendship while evoking the least hostility? Alex says, or wrote that, I'm an American University student. In February, I agreed to live with my current roommates for another school year. Now I realize that I want to distance myself from these people, and I no longer want to live with them. How can I end our relationship in a compassionate way?
Well, you know, I think it's a great question, Alex, and I think it's the idea of ending a relationship. I don't know if you need to end a relationship, you know, because if compassion is the word you're using, then why do you need to end it? You can choose to spend less time in it. You can choose to speak your truth in it. You can choose to show up in front of people and be yourself and do the things you want to do in it. That's a great practice. Now, the hard thing with, I mean, I'm not saying you don't end relationships, because I have ended relationships, but you walk it up to someone and say our relationship is over. Because the other thing is, as a kick-ass life practitioner, is I practice immediate forgiveness. So what happens is, you know, you can choose not to be around people if they're negative, if they're doing drugs, they're doing this, they're that, you don't feel great around them. But what happens is you could become the inspiration that changes them. So by being the person and living your life in their world where you don't feel like you have to end something, because you're going to completely be yourself, two things are going to happen. They're going to think you're a jerk and won't want to be around you, or they're going to start being inspired by you to actually start changing. So I don't think you need to walk up and have that compassionate conversation, but you can remember the 8 most powerful words: tell the truth all the time with compassion. So the idea is, hey guys, you know what, I don't feel like living here this year. I'm looking for some new stuff. You know, I want to meet some new friends. You know, I find blah, blah, blah. You can tell the truth in a compassionate way, but I don't really go around and sort of end relationships. I always have that seed of hope in my heart that people will sort of, because of the way I live, because of my truth and honesty, that one day they'll step back in. So the door is always open for me. Wouldn't you agree, Jen?
Yeah, absolutely. I love this question because we actually have a friend. Her name is Paula, and she's probably listening. Hi, Paula.
Hey, Paula.
When we first met, she told us that she's been listening to the Kick-Ass Life podcast, and it actually inspired her to make a change in her life and make new friends. And she's so excited about it and so glad that she is making that shift. And she did it with compassion. She did it because it was right for her. And now she's just super excited about where things are going and how they're shifting.
Awesome.
Yeah. So our next question, we had a similar question coming from two people, David Allen and Tanya Stevenson Pendergrass. So David asked, how does a 59-year-old unemployed man change careers and find work? And Tanya has a similar question saying, how do I shift gears from 20 years in a government job and to follow my dreams of being creative?
You know, there's so much similarity in the two questions. I mean, David, I think the first thing about unemployment is I think unemployment, and this may sound harsh, Dave, but it's I think it's a choice. And it's one because probably no one's ever talked to you about becoming employed. If that's what you want, to become employed and be employed by someone, I think finding a job is a relatively easy thing if you treat it like a job. In other words, you treat finding a job like a job. So if you spend 8 hours a day over the next week or the next month, and you went out there and you met people, and you actually just become the person that you think they most want to hire, and live that life, you know, have your energy inside of you, be authentic, be in your body. But then at 59, you have choices. What are the things you'd love to do? What's something that would make you feel alive that you'd like to work at? Now, remember, you're unemployed. So no one says you can't go up and say, hey, listen, I'll work for free. Why don't you just have me work here? I'll come down and volunteer. So there's a lot of ways to get what you want. But the most important thing is that you don't think that the world is sort of somehow in charge of that. I'm unemployed. Well, and here's what I see for most people, Dave, is what they'll do is they'll send out like one resume every sort of 7 days or 9 days, and they'll sort of be hopeful on that. You know, imagine if there were 300 out there. I don't even like resumes, but imagine you were just speaking to people. You know, you step into your passion, you step into your authenticity. You know, you just start being really living in the moment with people and deciding what you want, deciding what is it you'd love to do. You're 59, right? Now, if you're saying to me, hey, Dave, I'm 59, I'd like to retire when I'm 65, right? You're talking about 14 years. What are you going to do? And you want to create a sort of a residual income, that kind of thing. Was that 4 years?
6 years.
Let's see when I left school, Dave. I still can't count. Thanks a lot. I'm going to bounce the trampoline so you pull off. All right, no, but the idea there is then you want to get into something different, you know, and that's, you know, the idea then. There's lots of vehicles out there where you take control of that. I'm always about creating residual income. I'm always about building something that's all about relationships. So there's a lot of new muscles in there. And that's the same for Tanya. You know, how do you shift gears from a 20-year government job? Well, again, it's a mindset, right? You're already shifting gears by asking the question. So internally, you've shifted. Internally, there's something calling you. There's a yearning inside of you that wants to be fulfilled. But then it comes down to two or three things. Most people, it's fear. Fear of stepping out, fear of stepping in. You know, and yet, even though you're unhappy, what most people go through, you know, if you had that phone call, you've got 3 weeks to live, you know, you'd start to probably see your life differently and say, well, I'm going to do the things I've always loved. My contention is start doing the things you love and life will unfold in front of you. Paula, exactly, you just used Paula's name. I mean, Paula was looking for a change. She was somebody who Facebooked me. And so we've actually got her on a new path. She's completely passionate and excited. She came to a training of mine last weekend. And there's a number of you have done that. So if you want change, you know, I can't say how many times on the show I've said, if you're looking to create wealth and looking to create a new change in your life, why don't you just Facebook me and ask the question, and I will put a series of questions back to you and challenges. And if I can see that when I throw a challenge at you, that you get it done and that you have the mindset that you truly want to change, I'll help you. Absolutely. But it's all about that. It's all about discovering what you want and feeling the fear and stepping out anyway. No one says you have to. And Tanya, I don't know what your situation is. Maybe yours is the only income in your house, in which case, you know, you have to be strategic. And we have friends of ours, and a lot of friends of ours, that have built residual incomes and retired from their jobs using only 2 hours a day.
That's right.
Right? And we think of, who was that we were just with? Kyle, yeah. Our friend Kyle from the island, you know, he's a busy, busy massage therapist, has a big office. And him and his wife have completely redesigned their life using 2 hours a day, 4 days a week. And so what you do is, what are you willing to give up now? You know, are you willing to give up the television? Are you willing to give up, you know, sort of just doing stuff that doesn't take you towards your dreams? Are you willing to give up a couple of hours a day and commit to learning something new, you know, having a whole new mindset and stepping into it? And if you are, guess what? The world's waiting for you. I believe you can have whatever you want, all right? There is no circumstances that will ever, ever hold you back. What will hold you back is the imprisonment of your mind believing that somehow your circumstances, age, qualifications. If you believe that's a problem, guess what's going to be? It's going to be a real big freaking problem.
Okay, Dave, you ready for the next one?
Oh yeah, I'm really ready. Look, I'm clinging. I'm clinging onto my.
I'm curious to see if you can answer this one. Actually, this one comes from Joe Honan. He says, How to explain time zones of GMT to UTC plus 10 and GMT minus 5 to Americans.
Can you answer that? Joe, I think you should smoke something. I think two things are happening, Joe. Either you think that I'm smarter than I am, or you think that this is a little tongue-in-cheek, which I either one's fine with me. One of my great inspirations was the Dalai Lama, and I remember sitting with him. I was about 6 feet from his, or maybe 8 feet from his feet, sitting down as he was doing a Q&A with a very small audience in Utah. Idaho, I'm sorry, not Utah. Anyway, he was asked a question. It was profound and deep. And this is what changed my life. He suddenly leaned forward with this little boyish grin, and the whole audience is waiting on his bated breath. And he starts to slap his thigh and starts to giggle and laugh like a schoolboy and says, "I have no idea, but I will give you a little direction, Joe. Look on Google. I haven't got a clue." Great question, Jen.
Yeah, you've been stumped. Woo! All right.
Do you feel that, son?
Yeah, I'm starting to get warm. I need to take a layer off, I think. So
take them all off.
No, honey. Our next question is from Michelle Negri. She asks, how did you become a master trainer? What did you do before being a trainer? Not the window washer job. Was there someone?
Is that how she laughed?
Yeah, maybe.
Michelle, if she's interpreted your laugh differently and you don't laugh like, yee. We'll have to put a disclaimer on the show.
She asks, was there someone or something that led you to this path? What steps did you take? Clearly, there's her question.
Yeah, clearly I don't know much about you, but I know that you're an amazing kick-ass, blah, blah, blah. Hey, listen, Michelle, great question. Well, I mean, the truth was that I think I've shared this, and it's certainly in one of the other shows. I completely, I emceed a wedding that went horrifically wrong. I felt complete and total public humiliation to the point where I was just for years consumed. I wasn't a trainer, wasn't on stage. You know, and Les Brown says the two most important days of your life are the day you're born and the day you discover why. And because of this pain, and one thing I knew for sure is I would never, ever go on stage again. And because of this pain and what was going on in my life, my wife and I were going through a divorce, and she'd asked me to go to a personal development program where I saw Harv Eker on stage and watched a master at work. And then what I did was I put myself in, I volunteered for a year. I mean, I was basically a lackey for a year. I ran everything, mics, handouts. I just put myself, for Harv. And then what happened is I got myself ready. I prepared, I practiced, I knew what I wanted. I would not be denied. And one day Harv got sick and I had to go on stage because he wasn't there. And I got my big chance. And by which time, you know, I think the quickest route to anything is watch who's doing. If you see someone doing a great job, if you're a plumber, and there are plumbers in town that really have the most business, the greatest feedback, more customers, or our irrigation guy, Derek from Head to Head here in Kelowna, if someone's great at something, just look at what they're doing and model it. Modeling's the easiest way to success, and then add a little extra. So what I used to do is I used to watch the other people that work for Harv, and I'd see what they did, and they would tell me what to do when I was being trained, and then I'd do everything they did, and then I'd add a little layer on top. So Harv was always surprised. It's like, oh my goodness. And I never pointed it out, look what I did. I just said nothing. But he knew that I was doing things that no one else was thinking about, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so our next question is from Christy Galen, and I think I know the answer to this one. She asks, do you have a mantra to get you through tough days?
What's the answer then, Jenny?
Well, the one thing I've learned from you, speaking about modeling people who do things, is I would guess your mantra is focus on the solution. Because I always find that when something challenging comes up for you, that right away you're not dwelling on what's gone wrong, you're focusing on how to solve it and what to do next.
You're so wise.
Am I so wise?
Oh, you're so wise. Oh, you have your own show. Zenjen, answer all questions for you. Yeah, no, I think that's right. I've always been inspired. Like, you look at Rick Hansen, who, in those of you in the global audience, he was a guy called the Man in Motion. He broke his back while he was hitchhiking, and you know, when he, the moment he woke up, you know, he starts with the solution. Yeah, I don't have any legs anymore. So I start, I've met so many people like that who shit happens and they get on with life immediately. And so when stuff happens to me, I mean, there's nothing that can happen to me that will even be close to comparison to something that's happening. You think in Iran right now, a woman who's completely lost all rights and is married into a situation where she has no voice and she's completely covered from head to toe. And I'm not saying this is wrong. I'm just saying because there's a lot of inspired women in Iran. I'm just using this as an example, you know, where, you know, she's lost everything. And then you add some things that can happen in different parts of the world where, you know, female circumcision, where, you know, mutilated and really you live a life of no rights. So you think of those kids in Egypt I talked about one time, you know, living in the garbage dump. You know, when I look at my life, there is nothing. I mean, I could lose a leg, I could lose both legs, you know, I can be a paraplegic, a quadriplegic. But the thing is that I could still live a remarkable life. And Christopher Reeve showed us that. You know, Christopher Reeve was as inspiring. He was Superman who, you know, became a, he had to live on a machine for the last part of his life. And he was as inspirational the last part of his life as he was in the first part. So when crap happens, I just don't think about it. Even for a second, I don't dwell on it. Okay, so guess, I mean, you've seen a lot of stuff happen recently, you know, where stuff happens. And the first thing that goes through my head is, okay, so what do I want to have happen? And then I just step into that and I don't dwell for 1 millisecond on the problem. The problem's already done. I can't do anything. And I see a lot of people doing that, especially, you know, someone's embezzled and you'll hear it, you know, they're, wow, you know, in 1982, I lost everything. So what? Get off your ass and go make it again. And that's why, you know, and I know it sounds callous, but someone needs to kick you in the ass. Stop thinking about it. It's over. It's done. Or, it's, you know, you're in a divorce, a messy divorce, or your wife slept around with the plumber and the electrician, or you came home and your husband's in bed with another man. All these things that can happen to us in life. Guess what? We have a choice that it's happened. We can't change what's happened. What we can change is how we approach the next stage. You know, and I always, the first question that goes through my head always is that, you know, how many mistakes have I made in my life? And I've made millions. And so I don't come from a place of judgment. And so I don't heavily judge myself. So when I screw up, and it cost me dearly, which it can do. I mean, I've had a couple of things recently which were big screw-ups. I just don't think about it. I just think about, what do I want? What do I want my life to be like? So, Jen, is that true? Am I making this up?
Absolutely. And I think the lesson I've learned from is I actually wrote it on a sticky note, focus on the solution, and put it in my office because I was one of those people that would dwell in the past and lie in bed, tossing and turning, stewing over things that I'd done wrong, the mistakes I'd make, and or the should-haves, and shoulding all over myself, right?
She said shoulding, shoulding.
Shoulding. And it doesn't serve me to think that way, because I just end up being in this negative energy, and I'm frustrated all the time, and that doesn't help me to move forward and to move on. So what I've learned from you is that if I can just accept that that's what's happened, okay, what's next?
Right.
And the more now that I've focused on the solution, I've realized that eventually I get past it. And it doesn't last forever, and I can move on and get past those things. So
sure, and going back to the question for, you know, Dave with the unemployed, you know, Dave, you know, you're unemployed, you're 59, and the best years of your life are about to happen. I mean, that's what a better story than I'm 59, I'm unemployed, got nothing going on. It's just a shift of mindset. It's a tiny inch of shift. And once you make that shift, everything changes. Everything changes, you know. And I bet you, you know, every dream that you've been afraid to dream. If you're unemployed at 59, I guarantee there's stuff you haven't done because you've had to go to work. And you know, and if that's the case, there's stuff you could be doing now for the rest of your life that will actually just, you know, send a sizzle down your spine every single day. You'll bounce out of bed and you'll just feel like Tigger, and not Eeyore. They say, well, let's have a Tigger moment.
Yeah.
You're like Tigger.
I am.
Tigger. Oh, the wonderful thing about Tiggers is I'm the only one. Bouncy, 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 bouncy. Okay, next question. Well, listen, we're going along again, but, you know, you asked me a lot of questions. I want to answer them in case these may be important to you.
Okay, so this one's from Jake Simon. And Jake says, I'd love to know how or what strategies you communicate to your boys. Or more to the point, what strategies they are using now, ultimately getting ahead, start early on.
Well, you know, I mean, I think there's the assumption here that just because I do what I do, that my boys are somehow, you know, enlightened, or, you know, I mean, my kids are like every other kid, and I actually find a lot of people in our space, you know, top trainers, often their kids are more screwed up than anyone else, right? Because Because, I mean, they grow up with a parent that's kind of idolized by people or put on a pedestal, and there's a plane going over, put on a pedestal. And so, you know, I think the one thing I do, and I'm not a parenting expert. I think my kids are going to do great, you know. But they're, you know, they're not the Ivy League, get it right, A student. I mean, and I don't want them to be that, because I'm telling you, I've trained hundreds of thousands of people from all walks of life. And what I realize is most people are unhappy, and they just don't live their passions. And so they end up on a sort of a treadmill, and, you know, they go and get these jobs they hate. I mean, one of the things I want my boys to do, if I have a chance, and if they listen, which they may not, is to take a year or two off and travel around the world before they make any decisions about their life. The other thing I've said to them is, I've said, hey, guys, you know, I said, because you're not clear, Calvin has no idea what he really wants to do yet. I said, because you don't have any idea, Cal. I said, you know, college and university, I never went to them, but they could be a lot of fun. I said, and, you know, if you want to set yourself up for sort of have choices, get a business degree. And that way, when you leave, at least you can then think of business as a format for anything you want. So, because, I mean, whatever you do in the end, I mean, Jen has a yoga studio, which you're going to have in your own home soon.
Yeah.
But that would be... a business still to run. And so the business degree is what I think Cal's going to go after. He's 15. But he's not overly inspired by anything right now. And I don't think he has to be. But I see people who make choices and they go after it and they're really, really happy. And I see people who go after it. And guess what? When they get there, they're like, oh my God, is this it? This is it? I worked this hard to become a lawyer. I spent this many years and I'm this much in debt and I really don't like what I'm doing. So I think the thing I want them to do is just discover who they are and keep throwing them into new experiences when I can. And I suppose the other big thing is I don't ever lie to my kids. I tell them the whole truth. I involve them in the crappy bits. So I won't. I see so many parents who are so afraid to tell their kids the stuff they did when they were kids or what's really going on behind the scenes. They're protecting them. I think that is a disaster waiting to happen. Because I don't think kids are stupid. I think they really know when crap's going on. It's like when parents are fighting and they really should be divorced. You know, or they're staying together for the children. Your children instinctively, deep down inside and in the depth of their cells, they know something's not right. And they can see that you're not truly happy. And I think what we do is we're teaching them how to compromise our life, to be in a situation for other people when we shouldn't be. And so I think truth. I always tell them the truth. Was that a woodpecker?
There's a woodpecker in the show.
but I always, always, always tell them the truth. And whatever the truth is, you know, when I left Michelle and when Jen moved in, I sit down with my kids. I say, hey, listen, guys, this is your house. You have to be part of this decision. Or I'll ask advice. You know, when Michelle and I separated, it wasn't a big, horrible thing. It was she wanted kids. I didn't. So I sat down. I remember asking Ben one morning. I said, Ben, I want your advice. You know, Michelle and I could stay together and we could have children. And at your age, you know, that may mean that I won't see you again as much, or I've got to dedicate a lot of time to small kids. And, you know, it's a whole new commitment. And it's in my heart, I feel like I've already been away from you guys a lot. And so I would like this next chapter to be where we spend more time together. And I don't take that on. And I want your advice, because I love Michelle and she's an amazing woman. And she's been in your life for this many years. What do you think, right? Anyway, so Ben goes to school and he comes home that day and he jumps in the car and he's like, Dad, I've been thinking about it. I said, what's that? He said, I think that you should let Michelle go and be happy. She'll find someone, have a baby. And she's married now. You know, she's married. She's found the love of her life and she's leading a great life. And so I just involve my kids in the crappy conversations and in the decisions, you know, that I think, because I just don't think they're stupid. And I think that could arm them to deal with it. And you thought about, you said something to me earlier.
Yeah, what I admire about you is how you, I guess is discipline the right word, but when you get frustrated with them.
And when I get angry, you're a little shit!
You know, when they, rightfully so, they need to be taught a lesson, and you raise your voice, and but it's over in a second, and everybody's over it. As soon as it's over, it's over. It's like you've spoken your truth, you've shared how you feel, you've explained why, you've taught them the lesson, and then it's done. So the emotion comes out, and then that's it.
Well, you're talking from their point of view, where, you know, like we had this happen the other day with Cal, a couple of things that went on, and, you know, and I lost my temper with him, and I'm not always enlightened. I rarely lose my temper except with my kids and you.
It is rare.
No, but then You know, he's over it because he's realizes I can say my piece, I can lose my temper, say things and get it out. And then immediately, so, and I'll say this, I said, are you ready to let it go? And I'll say, me too. And we'll go up, we have a hug and we just move on. And it's like, it's gone. You don't see any residual impact or a residual effect. And we just move straight into something else, right? That's what you're talking
Absolutely,
about.
Absolutely. Because I mean, I'm usually in another room and I can just hear what's going on. And I expect Cal to come out and to be sad or upset or frustrated himself, and he's not. He comes out with a clear heart. He's happy. He's understanding, and
he's still a little shit.
And he still, and he still knows. He still is. He's 15.
Yeah. All right. So we're just because of time here. We've got to probably poke on the air.
Last question, Deborah Mara Donaldson. What gives you the courage to make the first call?
Well, you know, courage is only found in the face of fear, and fear. If you look at the definition of the word fear. It's, you know, a lot of people think it's false evidence appearing real, but it's not. It's the anticipation of pain. And so what I've learned over time is, for me, I have to feel the fear and take a step. I know you've heard that cliche, kind of feel the fear and do it anyway, but that really is the truth. The truth is, the first call, I don't attach anything to the outcomes, which makes it so much easier for me. Going first, if I smile first, I'm not attached to someone smiling back. If I hug first, I'm not attached to someone liking it. If I speak up first, I'm not attached to the world saying, oh, that was smart. I'm not attached to the audience liking me. I'm not attached to getting the sale. I'm not attached to anything. So what I realize is if I walk in with unattachment, and I think William Whitecloud in his book, The Magician's Way, he said, expectation is the enemy and detachment is the ally. And I think that so many of us have the expectation, you know, when we introduce someone to something, the expectation that they're going to like it. I don't have that expectation. I don't have that expectation, which allows me to go in with a complete understanding and a complete clean heart saying, hey, I'm just going to show it to someone. I'm going to speak to someone. I'm going to go first. I'm going to hug first. And whatever the outcome is going to be, that's okay with me. I can live with the outcome, whatever it is, and I don't take it personally. But I've learned not to. So I don't carry any ink. I mean, you saw that when I was putting the investors together for the island. Absolutely. How many phone calls did I make?
Hundreds.
Well, maybe not hundreds, but maybe 90. Maybe felt like 100. But I mean, when someone said no, I mean, I always gave them permission. I said, you know, no is an appropriate answer. And if it's not for you, and then immediately people are like, well, you know, and a lot of people were weirded out because they thought, you know, if I say no, it's going to somehow affect us. And I'm like, immediately they say no, I immediately change the subject and start talking about our relationship, you know, get back into a conversation about us, which allows me to go first all the time, you know, completely unattached to any kind of outcome. But most of us don't, you know, we'll dabble, you know, we'll try going first for a day, saying hi to people, and, you know, four people tell us we're weird or ignore us, and suddenly we stop. And that ain't a way to live. And I think that what happens is when you're completely unattached, the light's always bright because I step into it with a very, very bright light on. And I'm really there about in the experience, in the relationship with someone. And I think people feel that. And I think that's why people connect quite quickly. Now, you watch me do this all the time. So what do you think there, Einstein?
Well, that's pressure when you call me Einstein. I think that's great. I think because it is fear again, that fear coming up of going first and worrying about what other people are going to think. And I've learned that if I let that go, then it doesn't matter. I'm just going to do it anyway and see what happens and not worry about what other people think.
But when we first met, you were pretty attached though, right?
Absolutely.
And how was that working for you?
Not so great.
Yeah, because you were like an emotional ping pong ball,
absolutely,
right? You're just getting bashed from one end of the table to the other.
Yeah.
And it's always about, and remember, I mean, you know, I always say don't take advice from broke, unhappy people. And most people, most of us do, you know, we're so attached. And the person who's making us feel like crap is unhappy and broke. I mean, and they're the ones we're listening to, and that's the person we're trying to please. It goes back to our first question about, you know, ending relationships elegantly. Well, again, you know, you don't, when you step into the other place, nothing has to end. It's just a circle, right? It's like my life, I may end. I know this is a little metaphysical, but, you know, but I'm going to rot. The worm's going to eat me and something else is going to happen, right? I mean, it is a cycle, and I think that life is like that. But courage is everything. Courage to go for us. And I think the whole world is waiting for somebody else to go first.
And in saying that said, like, we have 15 seconds to end this thing. What's the
line that I use at the end of every show?
See you on the other side.
See you on the other side. Is that how I say it?
Yeah.
Well, we're sitting here again in the sunshine, on the hot tub, the sprinklers are on, the birds are singing. We're looking at mountains all around. There's still a little bit of snow. And as we say goodbye to this farm, we actually, what is it, 6 days?
Six more days.
We take possession of the new house. How are you feeling about that?
So excited.
Excited.
All right. Woo-hoo. We'll see you on the other side, everyone. Have a great Saturday.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.